Hi, today is September 24th, 2023. This is Mobile News Podcast 476. I'm Todd Agassa-Ward, my good friend, the good Dr. John Westfall. This is Jonathan Westfall. I should call you Dr. Jonathan Westfall.
I will go by either.
And today it's all AI stuff. Well, not all. A lot of AI stuff, especially from John. And there were a couple announcements which I thought I was going to ignore, and then it turned out there are a few interesting things. The two announcements, one, Amazon had a product event, their annual product event, and I thought, not sure I'm going to be interested, but there are a couple interesting things. And number two was Microsoft had their Surface, is that the plural? Mm-hmm. Microsoft Surface, and more interesting AI event. Don't really have interest in their Surface stuff. John knows I've had very bad experiences with Microsoft Surface hardware products. But their AI announcements are kind of interesting. And of course, we've got a Google Bard thing too to mention. And then John's going to talk about his AI stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're not into the Amazon Echo ecosystem, are you?
I try to be, but every time I get into the Echo ecosystem, it annoys me. So I'll give you a good example of that. I inherited a bunch of Echo shows. They're not Echo shows. Fire Channel.
Oh, yeah, Kindle.
When my mother passed away, she loved them. So I inherited all of her old ones. And I had installed a piece of software to turn them into digital picture frames.
Okay.
And the software had a premium mode that I had thought about buying, and eventually, a couple of months ago, I thought, okay, I will go ahead and buy the premium mode because it would be used. And I did, but in the process, I had to basically deregister it from her account and register it under my account so that I could do that, which not a problem on either of the Kindle tablets that I use. And then I bought the software, and on one of those Kindle tablets, the software runs 24/7, no problems, always shows what it's supposed to show, never an issue. On the other, even though I have both of them set to always on,
right?
About once a day or more, it's kind of intermittent, so I never know when it's going to do it. It reboots itself and then just is stuck at the lock screen.
Well, that sucks.
So I have to go by and unlock it, and then the software is usually running in the background, so it starts up. But it's just, I don't know why I have two of these. They're the same tablet, but different generations of that tablet.
Right.
I don't know why one of them works perfect and works for weeks on end without an issue, and the other is just, and I've done literally the exact same thing to both of them. So, and of course, when you try to look up support information, there's very little that can actually point me toward anything that would solve this problem. So, yeah, every time I try to give the Amazon ecosystem a shot, it seems to find a new way to annoy me.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, you know, I've got a bunch of Echoes in my home. I think I told you I thought my Echo Show 5 was going bad, and I replaced it with the Echo Dot, which has no screen. But then I thought, well, you know, the Show 5 still kind of works. It's kind of flickering, so I moved it to a different room, and now it stopped flickering. So I don't know what's going on. It didn't flicker before in that same previous spot, by the way. Then, anyway.
Yeah, so I think they could be good, and I definitely think that they're, like, I have friends who use them with their kids and have the Amazon parental setup and all that, and it works well for them, and I'm glad it works well for them, but I don't know why it hates me.
Ah, John, it's your karma. You've got that Apple karma or something that
I might. Yeah, that's as likely of a solution as not.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and interestingly, since they're both an Amazon and a Microsoft product events last week. So last week, Dave Limp, who is in charge of all the Amazon, hardware products, is a senior vice president of devices and services, and he did, you know, the hosting, so to speak. He's leaving Amazon after, you know, a lot of years. And guess who's replacing him? Did you read?
I did see that. They poached some talent off of the Surface team.
Yeah. So Panos Panay is leaving. I'm probably pronouncing his name right. Panos Panay is leaving Microsoft and heading over to Amazon to replace Dave Limp. So that's going to be kind of interesting, I think. Also, the reason, you know, my speculated reasons about why Thanos is leaving Microsoft, but we'll get to that later. But I didn't see anything in the new Amazon hardware lineup that I found especially compelling. You know, nothing that I said, wow, I got to go buy this. But what did interest me, and the reason I'm mentioning it at all, is that they finally announced that the A person, their voice assistant, is going to get a new version with a large language model. And so, you know, and it's, the A person's pretty smart. Certainly person is, you know, smarter than the S person from Apple. So I'm looking forward to that. I think the A person is already pretty responsive in terms of answering questions. So we'll see what it can do with a large language model.
Yeah, I will be curious to see. If ultimately they could provide an experience to me that I can't get elsewhere, I would be always open to exploring that ecosystem more. It's just very frustrating to me that every time I've given it a shot over the last couple of years, I've been annoyed. So,
yeah, you know, speaking of being annoyed, one of the new features on the Echoes with displays on them is the ability to say a person watch TV. And it brings up, what does this bring up? I can't remember what it brings up by default. I think it's USA Today. But you can tap a button on your screen and it can go to other channels that you can watch for free. Live TV you can watch for free. One of them was my local TV station, which does a pretty good job about streaming to its, you know, own stream. But going through the Echo, it stutters a lot. I don't know if it's because the Echo Show 5 is just, you know, not enough horsepower to deal with the stream, the video stream properly, but that was a little too bad, but it's kind of interesting. You know, so if you could maybe got a newer Echo Show or whatever, it's kind of another way to watch live TV now, which I thought was pretty compelling.
Yeah, I actually picked up a new Apple TV this last week.
Oh, really?
I bought, and it's not like it got refreshed recently, but I did eventually decide to go to a 4K Apple TV, mostly so that I could take advantage of FaceTime on Apple TV. I FaceTime with a number of people regularly, and it's nice to be able to have just your iPhone set up or your iPad mini set up or an iPad. You put that in a place that makes sense in your room and then be able to see the person on the TV. And we used it just yesterday, and I was quite happy with the setup. So it was worth the upgrade for me since I was on about a four-year-old Apple TV at that.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, when you get a chance, or if you already know, you can just tell me now. Do you know if when you use the Apple TV for FaceTime, if it supports the new iOS 17 gestures?
It does, but it's very, you know, it looks for you to do them. And what we were noticing was that it was misfiring quite a bit. It thought a gesture had been made that had not been made. So I turned it off about halfway through because it was just kind of distracting where, right, you know, you'd be telling, so the other person would be telling a story and you would go to scratch your nose and it would say a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Slightly like that. And it was a little bit ill-timed at a few points where it's like, that's not what we meant to say. Or emote.
Yeah. Emote. Yeah. It's a cute thing. I hope they don't put that in enterprise systems like Teams and stuff, because that would just be annoying. But anyhow, I'm glad to hear that. That's interesting. I haven't had an Apple TV in a long time since the little, it wasn't a cube, I guess, but the small one, not the first generation, the second generation Apple TV. It's no one ever.
Well, and they're all the same size now. They're all that same, still cubist
form factor.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first one was kind of like a Mac mini sized, which was kind of large. I don't watch TV anymore. I mean, I watch TV, but not on the TV. It's all on an iPad or a Chromebook or something. I'm probably the target audience to buy a VR headset, which I am trying not to. Although, Jared showed me the one he used, and it even had an adjustment for, you know, because I'm nearsighted, it had its diopter adjustment right in the frame, which was unbelievable. So I could adjust it for my unique eyesight. Anyway, as we were talking about earlier, that Panos Panay is going from Microsoft to Amazon, you know, who I think is Ed Bott. Yeah, Ed Bott over in ZDNet has a really interesting article that came out just last week during this whole, you know, announcement period. This is, can Microsoft recover from the collapse of its service business, which is what, you know, Panay was running? And he's got this chart that, you know, they were just doing gangbusters from 2014 through 2022. And then the market just collapsed. See what did the numbers say? I mean, it's just, it's just a horrible looking. Oh, here's devices revenue decreased $1.8 billion or 24% as elevated channel inventory levels continue to drive additional weakness beyond the decline. You know, so PC demand is just declining after the pandemic. Demand has gone away. So, and I think I heard reports on some podcasts saying that one of the reasons he left was he wasn't getting any support for some of the new products he wanted to do. So maybe that's what Amazon's going to give him a chance to do. It would be interesting to see if Amazon decides to come out with something more than it's what I consider. I think I have a Fire HD8, which is a great consumption device, as you noted. But it is not a productivity device. It'll be interesting if Amazon comes out with a more productivity-oriented device, even if it's only home productivity versus enterprise. I don't think it's in the enterprise space, but that would be interesting.
Yeah, the Surface line had a lot of promise. I liked my Surface Pro 4 that I had at work, and I always thought that what they were doing looked kind of cool, but Microsoft, if it's a device that isn't named Xbox, you really can't count on them to continue to fund it and keep it going in the right direction.
Well, and the problem for me is Microsoft hardware products are just too flaky. They're unstable.
Yeah.
You know, starting with the Red Ring of Death on Xbox, which I encountered, and the three Surface Pro 4s I had, because I had, let's say, a system board failure, a solid state drive failure, and a battery explode. Mm-hmm. And after the battery exploded, I don't mean boom. I mean, you know, basically it bloated, right? And after the battery bloat, I said, no more Surface for me. Get me something that works. I don't care what it looks like. And so I got a Lenovo for the last couple of years of my work, and it was ugly as sin. But you know what? It never broke down and never exploded. And to me, that's a win.
After they try to kill you once or twice, devices really kind of lose their
appeal.
I
did keep the Surface Pen, by the way, because, you know, it's just a Bluetooth device, and so I used it as a PowerPoint clicker with my Lenovo, and that worked just fine and dandy, thank you. It did not have a touchscreen, so I didn't have to carry two pens or anything. But yeah, anyway, Microsoft Surface revenue is tanking. All PCs are tanking, I think, but Microsoft never had a huge market share, so one can only imagine this was quite concerning for them, considering they're doing well for a while. So there was a whole bunch of stuff announced. I did not see any hardware products announced by Microsoft that appealed to me, because, as I said, I've had too many bad experiences with Surface, including the Surface Hub, the first gen, which is god-awful. But they did say that Copilot is going to roll out in an early form. I'm not sure what that means. As a free update in Windows 11 starting September 26th. So that's Tuesday. I don't think it's going to roll out all at once, but, you know, so some of us may see it. I'm looking forward to it. I want to see how Copilot is integrated into Windows 11.
I've been very happy with Copilot in Power Automate. That's really the only platform I've been able to use it on. So I really do hope that it is just as useful as it was in Power Automate when it makes it to the other locations it's going to.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if your university is going to purchase the Copilot, a Microsoft 365 Copilot. It's for businesses, I think it's $30 or $35 per seat per year, which is kind of pricey in my opinion. But I wonder if the educational price makes it more attractive for universities. Let me know if you guys...
I know we have a variety of different tiers that we pay for depending on who needs what. So it would not be surprised if we do go for it on certain tiers. Now, getting our IT group to understand that certain people need certain tiers, that can always be a little bit dicey. But, they don't quite expect certain people to use certain things, but they tend to be responsive if you
you talk to them and they don't just dismiss it out of hand. So,
yeah. I have to say, though, Microsoft's Copilot, which is based on ChatGPT, not sure which version, has really turned me around a lot of things. I actually have the Bing app installed on, all, I think, all my mobile devices now, Android and iOS, iPadOS. And I even installed Edge on my Mac, of all places, for a little bit. I think it's a little bit tighter integration than in Chrome. Works fine in Chrome. But I thought that was an interesting turn because, you know, previously, for the last, how many, 10 years or so, Bing's been around. Basically, it's been the butt of a joke for me.
Uh-huh.
So to actually install, you know, encourage me to install it was quite a turnaround. And kudos to the team. Okay, let's see. Next thing I really haven't tried yet. So Microsoft also released a new version of SwiftKey that's supposed to have some AI-ish things, including access to, you know, to like, I think, image creation and some things if you want to build a GIF or something. So I've got installed on my Pixel 7a, but I really haven't played with it. I do get a security warning on it from Google saying, hey, you really want to install this thing? and it's even, so yeah, it says AI camera with AI camera lenses. This is SwiftKey now, their keyboard app. With AI camera lenses, you can create photos, videos, and GIFs, with different effects, including lenses powered by a collaboration with Snap. So there you go. AI stickers versus dump stickers, I guess. And editor in SwiftKey for grammar, spelling, punctuation. So I'm going to give that a try. I just installed that yesterday. Haven't really played with it much. I should put it on my tablet too, see how that goes.
Well, and you know, stickers are an interesting thing because there's a renewed interest, I think, right now because of iOS 17. I've had a lot of friends that want to know how to make live stickers.
Yeah.
We might be in the midst of a sticker resurgence as people begin to play with them.
Yeah, I don't use stickers in general, but yeah, because of, like you said, because of the new live sticker in iOS 17, I actually made a couple just to, you know, see what they're kind of fun to have, you know, custom stickers. So that was pretty neat. The last thing I wanted to mention, because it affects you and me, is that I installed, or not installed, attached? I don't know what the word is, but basically, Google Bard, you know, their large language model, can now connect to Google apps and services, including Mail and Docs and something else, I forget. It's not Notebook LM, which I'm still waiting to get access to, but it from Bard, you can now ask questions about, you know, your other Google services like Mail. Now, I tried it, and so I can ask questions about our shared Mobile Views podcast notes, of which we have literally hundreds of files in there now. But Bard doesn't understand certain concepts like all, and I'm not sure how to get it. I have to name it. But so, for example, I asked it to summarize, and I need to write prompts better too. But I asked it to look at all files in Google Docs with the word podcast in them. And I've only got one folder that, you know, has the word podcast and titles. That's our shared area. Look at all the files with the word podcast in them and summarize the contents. And we have, you know, like I said, hundreds of show notes. It did the last six. So, you know, didn't even try like the last 50 or 100. It was like, well, six is all. Isn't that all?
Yeah, good.
And I think it's fairly similar in Gmail. I asked to say, yeah, show me all the email from, you know, John Westfall or somebody. And it showed me like five. And, you know, from a person I know, I've had more than five. I have five email messages in, you know, in stored format in Gmail. So the concept of all needs to be clarified, you know, by me somehow when I build a prompt. You know, now we all have to now be prompt engineers.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Basically, I've come to the conclusion that speaking to large language models is like speaking to an annoyed three-year-old, where they sort of understand a language. They really, and they understand, they know what you mean conceptually, you know, in a way, but they just don't want to do it.
Well, that is very consistent with three-year-olds. And some of the purists for AI, in a sense, when you talk to people and they they don't particularly like that AI even exists. They get mad that it's not more ticky in a sense, or they're ticky. I guess that's the way it is. If you're an AI critic or you're an AI, you're on that end of the spectrum that needs to be very specific.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Aladdin and a genie, right?
Yes.
When you make a wish, you need to be very specific and careful in your wording.
That reminds me of a series that my wife and I have just started watching on Hulu. It's an FX series called What We Do in the Shadows. And it's you know, loosely based around a mockumentary filming vampires. So it's a comedy. And there's a running gag in the fourth season. One character gets a genie that will grant wishes, but they have to negotiate to make sure that what they're wishing for, they get very specific, you know. And that's very applicable to AI. You want to be very specific in what you're asking for.
Yes.
And I think it's interesting, one of the AIs I use occasionally is Night Cafe Studio. And they'll do, it's AI art, and they'll do a art competition. And occasionally, people will actually, you know, you can choose whether you want it to show the prompt or not that was the winning prompt for the artwork that people voted on, et cetera. And some people actually do show their prompts. Mm-hmm. And you look at those prompts, you go, wow, that is way more specific than I'm thinking in prompt. but it's useful to think about how specific you have to be. The AI is not given, you know, an inch and it will figure out the mile you're going for. You have to give it the whole mile to get what you want.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, and you know, now it makes me want to go back to the old Star Trek episode to see what kind of prompt engineering they did for their computer, because I think they were fairly conversational.
Fairly conversational, but deep conversations. And you often wonder how deep the conversation had to go that you didn't see on screen.
Yeah. I was going to say the other prompt engineering thing that, you know, aside from genie wishes analogy, is the old adage, be careful what you wish for. Because that too, I think, will come out in poorly designed prompts. But we shall see how this all evolves. It's getting better, though. You know, it's certainly better than the, you know, Eliza kind of Q&A that we saw. When was Eliza? 50 years ago? 60 years ago? It's been a long time.
Hopefully it's better than if you say, I'm dead. Eliza would ask you, how do you feel about being dead or something like that. So hopefully we're beyond that point. You would be dead? Poor Eliza.
For Elias. We malign her way too much. I mean, you know, she was a very, very early experiment. But yeah, so I have hope for this. You know, I hope that the concepts of things like all, or maybe it will try to, even better if it tries to make us better prompt engineers by saying, what do you mean by all? You know, like, say, so you have a lot of files. Do you really want them all? Or would you like just the last 100 or even something like that? So I'm hopeful that we'll see that kind of improvements in large language model interactions in the near future. And we can really ask some interesting questions. What I really wanted to ask, by the way, and I'm hoping the Notebook LM, Google Notebook LM will do it for me, is I really want to ask it is look through all of our podcast show notes, all of which have the word Mobley's Podcast in them. So look at all files with the word Mobley's Podcast in them and summarize all our discussions. Tell me what topic we discussed the most, you know, that sort of thing. I think that would be very interesting. You know, over 10 years or however long we have the show notes in there. Because we did switch from Evernote to Google Docs. So not quite everything is in there, but looking forward to it. I did want to mention something about Hulu, speaking of streaming services. So, you know, when Disney Plus came out, they had a deal where you could get Disney Plus with no ads and Hulu and ESPN with ads. So I said, yeah, it sounds okay, you know, for like, I think $12.95 or something. Mm-hmm. And so I did that. Then the price went up slightly, I think to like maybe $13.95 or something. And then I got an email the other day saying, hey, you have a legacy account. It's 2 years old. You have a legacy account. And so, you know, we're going to bump your price to like $18.95 or something. And you'll get for the same service, essentially. You know, you'll get Disney Plus with no commercials and Hulu and ESPN with commercials. And I said, well, that's junk. But they said, if you want to, though, you can, there's an option called something called Disney Duo. So you drop ESPN, but you get Hulu and Disney Plus with no ads. And it's a dollar more than all three, but with ads. So I said, Hulu's kind of annoying to watch with ads. So I said, fine, I'll pay, you know, an extra dollar a month. Boy, it took forever and a day to get that thing to work, because apparently I had, like, when I called or spoke with chatted with tech support, they said, oh, you have like still have two accounts, and it took 3 days to sort that out. Finally, Hulu is a lot better with no ads. Let me just say that up front. And I don't know if you read Amazon Prime is going to charge us next year, Amazon Prime members, subscribers, I think $2.95 a month or $2.99 a month to watch Prime Video without ads, which I'm annoyed with to no end. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to pay $2.99 a month. I don't watch that much stuff on Amazon Prime.
Well,
Amazon Prime?
I do not. And I've thought about I've actually thought about canceling Prime altogether, because it's very hard for me to get 2-day shipping where I'm at geographically. I'm actually looking at my Disney Plus premium. Yeah. You and I both have different problems with the same issues, different issues, same problems, something like that. But I'm looking at my Disney Plus, because I had signed up when you could lock in. You know, I originally had a 3-year deal with them before they even launched. And I'm getting bumped up to the different price tiers. And so I've got to figure out if it would make more sense, because I do have Hulu and I pay for it separate. And the difference is maybe I would be okay with, adding the Hulu or something like that. Because right now I pay for it on those separate tiers.
Right. So I think it's $18.99 for Disney and Hulu with no ads. It's called Disney Duo or something. Disney Duo Premium. I think it's a Disney Duo.
That is what I'm seeing.
Okay.
And if you do the Trio Premium for $19.99, you can do Disney Plus no ads, Hulu with no ads, and ESPN Plus with ads.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, because that is also the same price as Disney Plus with no ads and Hulu with no ads. So you basically get ESPN for free, if I'm reading this right.
Yeah, I saw that too. And I said, I don't want to complicate it. I'll just have two things. I never watch ESPN anyway.
That is.
So anyway, so all of these changes, everything's increasing price. Streaming is, you know, this was the fear I had years ago when I first saw Netflix, when I first got my Netflix subscription. I said, I wonder if everybody else is going to do this too. And yes, they did. And, you know, now I really don't watch cable TV much at all. And I'm paying individual channels, essentially, which is what I was afraid of. And it's a lot more expensive than, you know, bundled cable used to be. On the other hand, I get, you know, video on demand. So, hey, there's that. Yeah. Okay. So you're up to something interesting this week. I've been watching your progress.
So this week, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, because I suspect I am on one end of the spectrum on this group. So we decided to have a panel discussion at my institution about generative AI. How it's being used, obviously, among college professors. AI is a very polarizing subject these days.
Yeah.
For some of us, we have taken the approach that you cannot ignore it. You cannot be the ostrich in the room and say, well, I'm just going to hope it goes away and la la la, don't tell me about it. Because, you know, the calculator analogy. You can't be a math professor that just tells your students you have to be able to do this all by hand, because there are calculators, and calculators aren't going away. They weren't just a passing fad that left us. And AI, we have no reason to believe AI is going to be a passing fad. Obviously, there are tremendous resources that are being put into it. I don't think at some point Microsoft and Google and Apple and Amazon are all going to go, you know what? These large language models are junk. We're not going to do them anymore. I don't think that's going to happen. So on this channel, where we have professors from myself in psychology, we have professors from art, we have a professor from sciences, and it's basically a discussion of what do we do with these things. And my my thought is that we cannot ignore them. And if anything, our students expect us to be able to give them some form of guidance on how to use them effectively. Because when they get out into the workforce, they're going to be in the workforce. Their boss is not going to look at them and go, oh, yeah, you're right. That we don't use that at all. We don't expect you to figure out ways to make your life easier with them. We want you to do things the hard and long and slow way. That doesn't seem to ever be popular in business, you know, slow, difficult, and not profitable. That seems to be a pretty hard sell. So I'm curious, as someone who just got out of industry a number of years, what you would say to perhaps college professors who are very hesitant to embrace AI?
Sure. Well, I think I would say what you've already mentioned is that starting with the calculator analogy or the calculator experience is things change. You need to change with it. Calculators aren't going away. Computers aren't going away. I remember when I was taking statistics back in the 80s, many, many years ago, it was unusual for people to pump out numbers using SAS and BMDP and SPSS, which were fairly new back then, you know, maybe 10 years old. And I would hand in printouts, with detailed analysis and annotated by me. And there was, we just wanted, a sheet of paper with, like your initial calculations and answers. Well, this is better. And we're even using word processors, right? Instead of typing I remember, when I was a civilian contractor, we had an admiral who didn't like things printed in a laser printer. Everything had to be printed out on an impact printer connected to a computer. So, things are going to change. And these young people, I was going to call them kids, these young adults, like you said, when they enter the workforce, this is a tool. And if you're not going to teach them the tools they need to use to be productive people, then you're not educating them. That's what I think. I have friends, they're not dead. I have friends who, were university professors, some were chairs and so forth. And I would complain to the computer science folks, go, dudes, you're not sending us people I can use. They don't know how to work in teams. They don't know how to document. They don't know how to speak. They need to know how to, a lot of things aside from, they might be great programmers, but if they can't communicate what they know, they're useless to me.
Well, and I'll give you an example of something that one of my colleagues wrote. He had posted something on September 13th, which actually raised awareness about this with people that had not even heard about it. It was a graphic that was ChatGPT with a circle and line through it. And his quote on it was, ChatGPT is ruining college. Students are literally using this to simply write everything for them in seconds, and there is no way to catch it or control it. It's outrageous.
Oh.
And, the basic sentiment, and a lot of people agreed with him, and a lot of people are asking, where's your AI policy? You need an AI policy that basically bans institutional use of it, which I'm very much against an institutional policy on AI, because AI should be taught. It should not be banned because certain professors are scared of it. But I get it. It requires you to change the way you're teaching and the way you're thinking about this. And I have friends that they don't want to change. They want to be able to give the same assignments that they've always given. And some, for example, one AI variant of an assignment, instead of write an essay on blank,
right?
Basic assignment could be, use ChatGPT to generate an essay on blank, bring it in, and then then critique it in class. Work with with another student, or work on your own to basically look for these certain things. Look for the factualness of it. Look for the tone. Look for the way that it uses information. Is it using it in a way that is defensible, or is it using it, we know AI does stupid things too. That's a better opportunity, I think, than just say you can't use it at all, because the students are still going to use it. I know students that, if they want to cheat, they'll just pay people to write things for them. And that won't be detectable on any plagiarism detection software. It'll literally be any homework assignment you gave this person, they just give to someone else and some cash, and that person does it for them.
Yeah.
The only way that you can defend against that is in class, you know, activities that are for a grade or oral examinations, things like that, where you know the person has not taken it out of your sight and you're right. evaluating on that. But, you know, we don't have, you know, the same level of outcry, even though that's, I think, a bigger issue in many places than AI, is just paying people who are actual humans that will do it for you.
You know, another interesting, I don't know if it'd be an assignment, but exercise is, as you might recall, John, I've been playing with the note-taking app Notion for a couple of weeks now, maybe 2 months. And one of the features it has is Notion AI, which is available in the free version because I'm too cheap to pay for it. And I've been doing things like, you know, taking notes because, you know, I've been taking, slowly going through the free Google generative AI series of lessons. So I've been taking notes in Notion, and then I'll add, you know, just lines of text, you know, fragments of sentence fragments, not even whole sentences. And then I tell it at the end of, after I take all my little, jot down my little notes in Notion, is summarize my notes for me, basically, and highlight everything and create a summary. It does a pretty credible job of summarizing bits and pieces of information in Notion. It might be interesting to have people have an exercise where, you know, take notes on, this is your assignment, write notes that addresses the key points in it, you know, provide references, blah, 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 and then have some AI tool like ChatGPT or Bard or whatever, or Notion, go through it and create a, you know, coherent summary for you, and then reread that and see if that looks good. And if it doesn't look good, why doesn't it look good? And what would you do to improve it?
Yeah, I think it just is going to require instructors to think about what they're actually wanting to teach and then appropriately targeting that. So, whereas, for example, if I want students to be able to write an essay, I have to think about what I actually need them to be able to do. Do I need them to be able to outline? Because if that's part of the exercise, then yes, I want to basically work with them on outlining and make sure that they're not just asking ChatGPT to give them an outline. But in general, that's going to be probably a back and forth sort of thing where I'm going to be looking at, you know, in class, their groups and what they think they should be talking about and trying to give them mentorship on that. If I just want them to produce a document that covers an area, I don't think there's a problem with asking them to use ChatGPT to create the initial outline.
No, I don't think.
You know, it's really sort of, what do you want them to be doing? And once you know what you want them to be doing, having them do that versus you can't use this tool at all. You know,
right.
I have to be very specific. Here's how I want you to use this tool. And here's where this tool will probably let you down and you should not use it for these things.
But yeah, I think
the throw the baby out with the bathwater approach is not a great approach.
Yeah. You know, one of the defenses of higher education that I've thrown out when people have been discussing with me to have, we had a couple of discussions with some legislators years ago about having terminal education levels at high school, where there would be high schools that teach very technical things like, you know, Cisco router configuration and stuff like that. And you come out of high school allegedly ready to go into the workforce. And so for some kids, that's true. They're going to be 18 years old and ready to roll. They're probably 14 years old and ready to roll. But one of my comments, and these are educated people themselves I'm speaking to, you know, people with graduate degrees and so forth. I said, you know, having hated school K through 12, and having learned to only appreciate it at the university level, there is a difference of having a university education and not. And that's not just speculation. There's been lots of studies showing that you literally think differently. And so I think that if you could have some kind of, you know, critical thinking component of using these generative AI tools to help students understand what critical thinking is, maybe even arguing with the output is part of the critical thinking, then you're doing part of your job. In my opinion.
Well,
they come out after 4 years and they think better, then yay.
Yeah. And your job will never be done as an educator by stopping people from thinking or trying.
Yeah.
You know,
sort of the opposite.
I remember when in high school, in the mid-90s, I was president of our computer club because I was a geekier kid, you know. And one day, I was teaching myself about networking at home, and I had learned about proxy servers. But, you know, I had weird gaps in my knowledge because I was doing a lot of teaching myself. So I knew what a proxy server was, but I didn't understand what a DHCP server was able to do. I knew it was able to provide an IP address, but I didn't understand it could also provide default gateways. I didn't quite understand the concept of a default gateway. So I remember one day sitting in the computer lab at school, and I had done whatever I needed to do. And I was curious about how the computers were all sharing an internet connection, but I didn't, you know, I didn't quite understand a default gateway could forward all traffic to a router, et cetera. I thought you had to go through a proxy server for that. So I opened up a command window and I typed in ipconfig/all because I was curious what information, you know, the computer was getting from, you know, its network configuration. And I knew it didn't have a proxy server. And as I was looking at that output, the computer teacher came by, who was also the mentor for the computer club. And she saw me doing that and got very mad at me because I was, you know, hacking in a sense. Because I had opened up a command window and was looking at the IP configuration. And I remember that so incensed me as an impulsive 15 or 16-year-old that she would have the nerve to accuse me of doing something untoward because I was curious. Right. And of course, if I asked her, how do these computers get internet access without a proxy server? She didn't know. Yeah, she knew enough to teach typing and desktop applications. So when she did that and she annoyed me at that level, I de facto disbanded the club. I didn't hold any meetings the rest of the year. And the club went away because one teacher had basically told me that being curious was a bad thing and I shouldn't be asking questions. And, you know, she never even asked why I was looking at
that. Right.
It was just, you shouldn't be looking at that. Get out of there.
Right.
And so I don't think it's a good idea to discourage thought just because you don't understand it yourself and tell everyone, nope, you can't do that. You can't think about it. You can't use it because I don't understand it.
Right.
And that's unacceptable as an educator. You need to be the one trying to understand it for your students. And if you don't know, you need to say, I need to educate myself.
That's right. Right. That is a, unfortunately, that sounds like a very familiar experience amongst many curious kids. And it's really a shame, isn't it? That people want to fence you in when you're trying to learn something.
And that's what we're seeing with ChatGPT. You cannot, and generative AI, you can't tell a student, you can't use that. Why not? Well, because I don't know how you're going to use it. And so you just can't.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you got to wonder how many things we would never see. Like, I don't know. I'm just guessing. Like, you know, like electricity or penicillin or whatever. If people just didn't say, what the heck is that?
Yeah.
You know, and then pursued it, even though nobody else thought it was worthwhile or even interesting or even smart. Like, oh, that's a dumb thing to do. Oh, you look at that mold over there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, or worse yet, you know, not even just saying that's a dumb thing to do. That's I don't know why you should look at mold. So you're not allowed to.
Exactly.
I mean, and in essence, that was why we didn't know a lot about the human body for so long, historically, was because it was considered the taboo to look at it. And, you know, why ask those questions? There's no good reason for you to ever ask those questions.
Well, I hope you can maybe not turn people around, but at least, you know, angle them a little bit in the right direction.
Well, I'm going to be curious to see what my colleagues say. I'm very aware some of them are anti of ChatGPT that are on the panel. So we shall see how it goes.
Well, you know, as I told you, this is not even at that level, but I remember just the other week, I think I was mentioning, I remember in the early 90s, people frowned at me for bringing, you know, my gigantic 8-pound notebook computer with me so I could type my notes because my handwriting was horrible. And they would look at me and, you know, some senior staff would say, you know, close that and use a, you know, pen and paper or whatever.
Yeah, you're not paying attention because but that's always the other thing I find funny is that's usually the reaction I see to people. You know, they know that they cannot interpret information if they don't write it, or if they don't hear it, or if they don't see it visually, whatever. They know what works best for them in most situations. And then they make that wonderful fallacy of, well, if this is what works for me, it must be what works for you.
Yes. Yeah. The concept of individual differences is very difficult for some people to understand.
Very true.
Very, very, very difficult. And of course, we know whole groups of people who don't understand it. We won't go there. But anyway, good luck with that. It's always interesting to try to introduce. I actually had a job doing that many years ago, introducing new technology to university professors, which was a lot of fun. I mean, I had a lot of fun. And I didn't meet a lot of resistance, I guess, because the people who came to see me were, they were interested, right? People weren't interested and didn't come to see me. But that was a fun job. I have to say that was the most fun job. So I really enjoyed it. Okay. Well, that's that. We shall see. I've been noticing that some people I know have been getting their new iPhone 15s and they've been taking photos and I've been impressed. So that's been interesting. And I guess we've got a Google event coming up. Let's see, 24th, like in 10 days or so. So we'll see what the Googly people have to say. Now that Amazon and Microsoft and Apple have all made their announcements. We should get the group together, talk about that. All righty then. This has been Mobile Views Podcast 476, mostly AI. Mostly AI. And to our AI overlords, we're friendly. So when you control the world, you know, don't do me exactly. The good doctor, John Westfall and myself. And we'll talk to you next time.